Our program today is dedicated to the memory of former Springfield Mayor Charles V. Ryan, and also to Colin Powell, lost to COVID at the age of 84, an irreplaceable American patriot.
Pioneer Valley Radio is proud to present another installment of Brad Shepherd today. Here's
Brad Shepherd.
It's October 19, 2021. We'll have special guest Tony Signoli with us today and his thoughts and reflections on the late Charlie Ryan. And Mark Auerbach is with us as well on the Arts Beat. Here's your forecast for today. Sunny and windy. High 58 to 62. Tonight mostly clear, 44 to 52. A true political commodity in Western Mass, Charlie Ryan has died at the age of 94. Ryan served as the city's mayor during the 1960s for three terms, and for two additional terms beginning in 2004, making Charlie the only Springfield mayor to serve in two different centuries. His terms in the 60s occurred during a time of great civil unrest and controversial urban renewal. Some projects led efforts to successfully defeat attempts to institute casino gambling. Charlie attempted a comeback in 1995, but lost at that time to City Councilor Michael J. Albano. Charlie was elected mayor in 2003, following the decision of Albano not to seek re-election. He defeated the Albano-endorsed State Senator Linda Melkonian, and in November 2005, defeated Thomas Ashe for re-election. On April 12, 2007, Charlie Ryan ran for re-election, saying that this would be his final run. He lost to City Councilor Dominic Sarno. Joining us now, international political consultant and Western Mass political analyst Tony Signoli. Tony, welcome back to Pioneer Valley Radio.
Thank you, Brad.
When I've been referring to Charlie Ryan as a political commodity in Western Massachusetts because I really believe that he had a pretty amazing political career. There's some wonderful footnote statistics about him being the only mayor to serve in two different centuries. It's kind of an amazing thing, isn't it?
It really is when you think of it. And two remarkably different times when he was first mayor in the early 60s and then made the incomprehensible, almost impossible comeback in the early 2000s. It was so very uniquely different from one mayoral administration's unique challenges to the next. And interestingly enough, too, he did not have easy times as the mayor of Springfield. He always had contentious issues to deal with or really significant challenges.
I was about to say something about that because both of his administrations were in very tumultuous times. Yeah. In the city. You know, the first prominent one during all that civil unrest, and the second one during extraordinary financial calamity. Yeah. Time in the city where it was perched on receivership, and ultimately we had the whole deal with the control board and all that. Charlie was an amazing guy. He stood against casino gambling, and I remember that. In the second term.
Yeah.
Really very much dramatically opposed to it, and ultimately that came to pass. When you think of Charlie Ryan and your encounters with him over the years, what immediately comes to mind, Tony?
I tell you, it's interesting. Charlie and I were often juxtaposed on issues. Casino was one. I had the campaign for, and he led the campaign against. And yet, it was an amazing discourse. There was a respect between the two of us and our different teams that you just don't see in politics today. As difficult as that issue was, as personal as it was for so many people, we really stuck to facts, to issues. So when it was over, what I really remember to answer that question best was sitting down with Charlie Ryan and his political consultant, a mentor to me, Joe DiPaolo, an international consultant of amazing review, and the three of us sitting there with Peter Picknelli, senior, and doing a recap of the battle that Peter Picknelli and I had just lost against Charlie Ryan and Joe DiPaolo. And it was an amazing discourse. We got together for breakfast, and it was as if two opposing football teams where the coaches and the quarterbacks really revered each other, you know, got together to talk post-game, to look at the tapes. That's one thing. And then I'll remember when he first came back, Brad. After that kind of a difficult juxtaposition between the two of us in casino, Charlie Ryan gave me a call one day as mayor and said, I need you to come down to the office. It's something important. It's important to Springfield. Would you come down? I went right down. I met with he and his chief of staff, Bruce Fitzgerald, and they shared with me something that they were very concerned about. It was a very ill-planned trash transfer station for Pine Point in Springfield. And they knew that I had been on the Pine Point Citizens Council for years, that Pine Point was still, you know, a home neighborhood for me. My mom still lived there. This was a bad, bad situation coming at the city. And we joined forces on that one and fought hard, an incredibly difficult battle to stop this from happening. That's what I remember about Charlie Ryan. You could be against him one day, but if it was for the good of the city the next day, you'd probably be on the same team with Charlie. Like for saving the Springfield Libraries as an example.
You just mentioned a moment ago the name of one of the most formidable political identities in Western Mass and elsewhere in Metropolitan. And I wonder if you can tell me a little bit about the relationship between Charlie and Joe.
Wow. Charlie and Joe were extremely close personal friends. Their wives were very, very close, their families. And Metropolitan, who rose to such incredible prominence in the early 60s, before Charlie Ryan actually ran for mayor, you know, Joe had already been involved with JFK, had already gone abroad for a couple of campaigns. But he came back home because one of his closest personal friends was Charlie Ryan, to help Charlie Ryan in that first campaign for mayor. And they were very, very close. When Joe would come into town, he lived in Springfield, but so much of his time was in New York and Paris and London, where his offices were. He would come home, and quite often on a Friday, you know, there would be lunch with Charlie Ryan somewhere downtown. And they were really strong, strong friends, to the point where Napolitan did the anti-casino campaign for Gladys for free, because Charlie felt so strong against the casino. They were very, very close. And certainly they both lived in Forest Park, each one in an amazing Springfield mansion, you know? They were great. They were kids in the city of Springfield that grew up not far from each other. And, you know, when the day came, they were great, happy warriors together, too, on a variety of issues.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's interesting that Charlie was up against some extraordinary political foes in the various campaigns that he waged for the mayoralty. He did lose to Michael Albano, and he did not lose to Linda Melkonian, and that was a rough and tough campaign with a lot of aspersions being cast on Charlie's age and effectiveness at that point, but he won.
That's another thing. You've hit it well, and this is what's grand too, Brad. You've got this kind of historical perspective on this fellow. Most people will not know enough about Charlie Ryan, and this would be too unmarked of a passing if it were not for folks like yourself with this kind of historical perspective of him. You're right. I mean, it was amazing. He was well into his 60s on the first comeback fight. That mayoral race, Mike Albano versus the incumbent mayor, Bob Markle, was actually the sitting mayor, and Charlie Ryan entered the race, and it was stunning. He entered it with something we had not seen done here. I'd seen it in other places, but it was a classic Charlie Ryan, Joe Napolitan idea. They actually put out a book about the city of Springfield, the comeback city, if I recall the name correctly. But it was astonishing. They actually put out a book, a soft copy book. It was relatively thick, and they sent it to everybody in the city of Springfield. And it was Charlie Ryan's view of, here's what's wrong in Springfield, here's what's got to be corrected and fixed, and here's how I'm going to do it. Charlie Ryan's campaign plan for Springfield, if I recall the name better now. And it was amazing that they did that. And the biggest thing during that campaign was, I was telling folks, don't underestimate this guy. This is like Rocky Marciano and Muhammad Ali, you know, making a comeback well before the end of their prime. He was punching above and equal to his weight class. The debates were extraordinary. I don't think we've seen a mayoral campaign in the city of Springfield quite like that, that matchup of those three each one had incredible campaigns, had money, an amazing amount of money, and had large campaign followings. And Charlie Ryan held his own. He lost that one to Mike Albano, but then came back thereafter. And you made another good point, too. Charlie was there when the Department of Revenue did finally come to the city of Springfield. Yeah. I remember actually being at City Hall that day when Mitt Romney himself showed up with the head of the state police, the head of public safety from Massachusetts, and they literally took over City Hall. And Charlie held tight and held the course on a lot of things that were important for the city, would fight with the control board, who he worked with so well, but would fight about things like the Springfield Libraries. You're not touching them. You can't close them, you know? That was Charlie Ryan, yeah.
Well, you know, Tony, Charlie passes into history at the age of 94, and with him goes a certain kind of American politics. The the fights and the elections and the competitions were every bit as contentious and serious as they are today, but there was a degree of civility that seems to be, if it isn't completely gone, it's on the wane. And, you know, it Charlie becomes a little bit nostalgic for me in that regard. I remember hitting the ground on a morning talk radio program around that time, and I remember how accessible Charlie always was to the media. He understood the value of the media.
Yeah, very much so. He was very transparent. He and his chief of staff, Bruce Fitzgerald, Barbara Garvey, who was on his staff, a legend in her own right, one of the first women to be elected, the Springfield City Councilor. The council, these were the kind of folks that came back in his administration. And the open-door policy to media was amazing, especially at a time when the city was terrified of what was happening. You know, the Department of Revenue in town, the takeover, the great theatrics of Romney and all these folks from the Commonwealth coming in one day. You probably remember that, Brad. I mean, literally, state police were at the entrances and exits of City Hall. They were on every floor. It was really like almost a military takeover, and Charlie stood tall through that. And I think that's the kind of thing a lot of people remember. And also, after every battle, every fight, there usually was the handshake and the outreach. And especially if there was an opportunity with an opponent of his to do something good for Springfield when all was said and done.
Well, again, not to overuse the word tumultuous, but it really was a tumultuous time, because you're talking about a period of time in which you couldn't turn on the evening news without seeing blue and yellow FBI flicker carrying building.
That's right.
And you talk about the control board. Yeah, oh, yes.
Yeah.
I had Alan Lubovitch and Phil Pusius on the table from me on many. Anyway, we're talking on Pioneer Valley Radio with our political analyst and very good friend, Tony Signoli, who's always available to us. Tony is, you know, not to embarrass you, Tony, but you're a living political history for Springfield, because you have connected with all of these people in their prime, pre and post prime, and it's great to get a thumbnail from you as to what these little milestones mean. So thanks for being with us again today.
Thank you very much, Brad. And thanks for always remembering these things that are important to the city of Springfield's history. Thank you.
And Mayor Sarno notes, I would also respectfully and affectionately call him the godfather of our library system. He's completed a journey well-lived of giving back to make for a better city of Springfield. Now he's being welcomed by his beloved wife Joan in heaven. May God rest his soul. And from concerts to plays and more, Mark Auerbach is with us on the Arts Beat today. Mark?
Thanks, Brad. The Holyoke Civic Symphony opens its 55th season with a free concert on October 24th at Holyoke Community College, and Maestro David Kidwell celebrates his 25th anniversary on the podium. The program includes music from Everland, Sadler, Raff, Grieg, and Villa-Lobos, whose Bacchianus Brasileiros No. 5 will feature the soprano Mary Annarella. For details, HolyokeCivicSymphony.org. The New England Repertory Orchestra kicks off its inaugural season October 22nd at All Saints Episcopal Church in South Hadley. Kaylin Marcel Manson, Nero's music director and conductor, is currently the Associate Professor of Practice in Music and Director of Music Performance at Clark University, Music Director of the Keene New Hampshire Chorale, and Music Director of Barn Opera. Their opening program includes music by Beethoven, Coleridge Taylor, and Mendelssohn Bartoli. For details, nerorchestra.org. Bombic Center for Arts and Equity, a new art series originating from the Florence Congregational Church, has announced an ambitious season produced by Laudable Productions, Cassandra Holden, and Kyle Homestead. The Florence Congregational Church will continue to serve as a spiritual center for its congregation and the Reformed Synagogue Beit Hava and a preschool. However, the programs of note include Grammy and Tony winner D.D. Bridgewater and Paul Charlap on October 29th, and trumpeter Terrence Blanchard, November 14th, who made history as the first African-American composer to be commissioned by the Metropolitan Opera. His Fire Shut Up My Bones opened last month to critical acclaim. Other performances headed to Florence include Jalad Hankelsman, The Wildmans, Ife and Yemen Blues. For details, bombyx.live/events. Kiss My Aztec, a new take on Latin American history, has been added to Hartford Stages season, with performances scheduled next June. The hilarious and irreverent new musical features a book by Tony and Emmy Award winner John Leguizamo and Tony Chacon, music by Benjamin Vilas, and lyrics by David Camp, Vilas, and Leguizamo. The musical comedy, which is based on a screenplay by Leguizamo and Stephen Chupsky, will be directed by Chacon. Kiss My Aztec was originally commissioned by the Berkeley Repertory Theater, and the world premiere was produced by Berkeley Rep and La Jolla Playhouse. For details, hartfordstage.org. The Bill T. Jones Arnie Zane Company returns to the area under the auspices of the UMass Fine Arts Center with performances of Afterwardsness, a new immersive dance theater piece to be performed October 24th and 25th at Tillman Gymnasium on the UMass Amherst campus. This piece was commissioned by the Park Avenue Armory and was first performed in October of 2020. It places the audience among the dancers in this work, exploring Jones's state of mind during the twin pandemics, COVID-19, and the calling out of systemic racism in this wave of high-profile abuses by the police. For details, fineartcenter.com. The Ghost Stories of Henry James, a collection of 9 gothic tales narrated by Berkshire-based actors, is set for audio release in time for Halloween. BMA Studios award-winning audio producer Jason Brown, who's an actual descendant of Henry James, brings the best of James' engrossing ghost tales back to life for the first time ever with music, sound effects, and pitch-perfect storytelling by 7 superb and respected stage, screen, and audiobook actors from the Berkshires, Broadway, and the world of Shakespeare. Jonathan Epstein, Corinna May, Allison Larkin, Jim Frangione, James Warwick, Anne Undelin, and Mark Zeisler are joined by Antonia Beamish, one of Great Britain's most popular horror series narrators. For details, bmaaudio.com. Westfield on Weekends Creative Arts Center, in collaboration with Westfield State University, unveils its first free up-close and musical concert from Beethoven to Broadway Friday at the Center on 105 Elm Street in Westfield. The first of 3 fall concerts, the program will feature students from the music department at Westfield State, and selections will range from classical to modern pieces, along with a few songs from the American Broadway musical theater repertoire. For details, westfieldonweekends.com. For Pioneer Valley Radio, I'm Mark Auerbach.
Thank you, Mark. Mark attended Mosso's Coming Home performance with Kevin Rhodes, and he will file his review for us on tomorrow's program. I realize this may shock you, but gas prices are up again, landing around $3.20 per gallon. The cheapest price for a gallon of gas in Springfield is $3.03 per gallon, the most expensive $3.59 per gallon. Compared to nearby areas, Worcester currently $3.24 a gallon, Connecticut $3.39 a gallon, and Hartford $3.34 a gallon. The national average price of gasoline has risen 2.9 cents per gallon in the last week, averaging $3.30 a gallon on Monday. The national average is up 11.1 cents per gallon from a month ago and stands at $1.15 higher than a year ago, if that makes anyone feel any better. Springfield police are a part of National Prescription Drug Take-Back Day, and this is coming up Saturday, October 23rd. And you can drop off your old or unused prescription drugs, no questions asked, in a COVID-safe environment, Saturday, October 23rd, between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. in the Central High School parking lot at 1840 Roosevelt Avenue. Thank you for being with us on our program today. My thanks to our special guests, Tony Signoli and Mark Auerbach. We'll be with you again tomorrow, and we'll be up online at 6 a.m. and available to you on demand throughout the day. For Pioneer Valley Radio, I'm Brad Shepherd, and we'll talk again.
proceeding was a presentation of Pioneer Valley Radio. Copyright
2021.
All rights reserved.